Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Black Women Widows Empowered Blog Talk Radio, and this is our fourth show, and thanks to those that have called in and those that are listening to the replay, I thank you. Can everyone hear me? I have unmuted everyone, so I want to make sure everyone is able to, discuss and chat interactively. So can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Okay, well, welcome. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. I know it's 11 o'clock at night, but I figured that everyone got their chores done and had something to eat. So I figured that this time would be good for especially those that are calling in from the East Coast. That would work for them well, as, you know, I'm sure. So I just want to thank you again. My name is Sabre Robinson. I am the founder of the Black Women Widows Empowered. We are an organization and network focused on empowering widowed women of color, as well as providing avenues of bringing together all widowed women, no matter what color, via our various outreaches, like our dinner heels and how-to events, which is a sit-down dinner, which we eat, laugh, and chat about various topics. And we also hold meetups, you know, meetup.com, in Charlotte and Baltimore. So check us out at blackwomenwidowsempowered.com for more information. And just so you know, I am based in Charlotte, North Carolina, via Baltimore, Maryland. All right. Anyway, let's go ahead and get started. Thanks again for being here today. So we are here today to talk about, chat about love, loss, how grief can be dealt with when a spouse dies suddenly, especially Charlie Murphy's death and how he must have felt when his wife died. So I just want to get a feel for, you know, you guys, how do you feel about it? You know, once we all heard the news, especially the background of how his wife had died. So this is an open discussion. If there is anyone who happens to be on the line that is related to or a friend of either Charlie Murphy or his wife, Tisha Taylor, I just want to relay my heartfelt condolences, and I can't say how sorry I am to both families of Charlie Murphy and his wife, Tisha Taylor Murphy. So may God be with you and family and continue to strengthen you during this difficult time and years to come. So let me just send some positive vibes about Charlie Murphy before we really get into it, before we get into our discussion. So who was Charlie Murphy? His name, of which he was given at birth, is Charles Quinton Murphy. He was born July 12, 1959, and as you know, he passed away April the 12th last week. So he was an American actor, comedian, voice artist, and writer. And he was best known as a writer and cast member of the Comedy Central sketch comedy series on the Chappelle Show. And as you also may know, he was the older brother of Eddie Murphy, born in Brooklyn. Do we have any Brooklynites on the call?
I am.
Anyone from Brooklyn? All right, all right. So I just want to go ahead and briefly just kind of you know, mention some of his movies that that he was a part of. As you know, as I mentioned before, The Chappelle Show. Then he did Norbit, Black Jesus, The Perfect Holiday. I saw that. I love that Christmas movie. Our Family Wedding, which was which came out in 2010, and of which he this movie came out after his wife had passed away. So apparently he must have been filming while his wife was sick, and during the time that his wife passed, I was able to hear an interview on YouTube of him just describing the movie and his wife. and just talking about how he was living living again after his wife's death. And it was a pretty good interview. So, you know, he's done several movies: Lottery Ticket, Night at the Museum, Roll Bounce, Meet the Blacks. If I say any of these that you guys can relate with or you like, just give a shout out to it. Again, this is an honor, a special tribute to the life of Charlie Murphy, and I just want to kind of relate it to grief and widowhood, whether you're a widow or a widower. Additional movies that he was a part of: CB4, Vampire in Brooklyn, Harlem Nights, Moving Day, The Players Club, King's Ransom, Paper Soldiers, Jungle Fever, wow, Frankenhood, Freaknik, the musical, The Hustle, The Kid Who Loved Christmas, Mo Better Blues, Unearthed, Murder Was the Case, Death of a Dynasty. He's been around a while, and that was from 2005. Bar Stars, The Cookout 2, 3 Days to Vegas, Thugaboo, Pauly Shore's Natural Born, Universal Remote, Happy Valley, and several others as well. And this is just a time span of more than 10 years. So I just want to give a big, you know, shout out to his family and to his fans, and again, just relay my deepest condolences. So at this time, I'll just go ahead and just begin the interactive discussion. And again, thanks to everyone who's on the call. So if I can just, if you guys can just shout out, you don't have to give your name, just tell me where you're from. Tell me where you're from. I'll go ahead. I can see the phone numbers here. I'll just go ahead and just shout out a, you know, just the first three, the area code of where you're from, and just tell me what it is, because I'm not familiar with all of these area codes. So 301, I think that's Maryland. Is that Maryland?
Yes, it is, but I'm actually in North Carolina.
North Carolina, what city?
Right here in the city of Oaks, Raleigh.
All right, Raleigh. Then we have area code 810.
That's Michigan.
All right, Michigan, 201.
That's Teaneck, New Jersey.
New Jersey, area code 216.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Ohio, all right, and 404. I think that is Atlanta.
Yes, that's Atlanta.
All righty. And 908?
That's East Brunswick, New Jersey.
New Jersey, all right, all right. Thank you guys so much. And again, this is also airing online, so we have some people that have are listening online as well. So thanks again. So let's go ahead and get started. So callers, what did you think about hearing about Charlie Murphy's death? What was your reaction? Anyone? I know I was very surprised. It was one of those situations where it was no one really knew. Anyone want to go ahead and just kind of, you know, just tell us how you felt when you heard about it? What about Michigan?
I'm sorry?
Asking how you felt? Yeah, Michigan. I just said, what about Michigan? I'm just trying to get a, you know, an interactive discussion about how callers felt about, you know, once they heard about his death. And I'm just picking on anyone, an area code that I just see. So,
you know, when I heard about it, it kind of tapped into one of my biggest fears as a widow. And, you know, I had already lost my husband, and one of my biggest fears is something happening to me too before both of my children grow up and are able to be self-sufficient and sustain themselves, or just something happening to me, period, and they, you know, lose both of us. And so that was kind of like, of course, you know, sympathy, empathy, you know, towards the family, towards, you know, his children, towards, you know, all of the fans, you know, because of who Charlie Murphy was, but also, on the empathetic side, you know, just kind of thinking, you know, while, you know, both those children lost both parents, and that's, you know, one of the biggest fears that I have when it comes to my own children.
Absolutely, absolutely. I believe on the call we have several widows and a widower, if I'm not mistaken. And so basically everyone on here, just about everyone, I believe, can identify with, you know, what if both spouses, you know, what if I go next? What about my kids? And that's a great point. That's a great point. Anyone else?
I didn't know about his wife prior to hearing about him passing. That happened. And they had children, and it's always interesting. As a widow, to hear how widowers handle that. I mean, I know there are a lot out there. The only one that I kind of follow that's out there in the public is Marvin Sapp, who lost his wife, and I don't know if he's married or not. But that's the only one that I really know in the public eye that I kind of follow how he processes that. But it's always interesting because men handle grief and loss of a wife differently than women do.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you said that. You know, we heard about Marvin Sapp's wife, but I did not know that Charlie Murphy's wife had passed. It was more of a, you know, kind of hush-hush until, I guess it was one of those things where you just want your privacy, and you don't hear a lot about that. And, you know, it's, you want to, not saying that, you know, you want to be nosy and find out, you know, but it's just that it helps, you know, it helps with the healing. It helps with others that are in that situation. And I don't hear about a lot of, you know, black men widowers in the public and how they deal with grief. So that's
right.
A good point. That's a good point. Anyone else? And it was a shocker to me as well when I heard, you know, when I read about his wife. And, you know, I was thinking when I read about it, I was like, well, what was I doing back in 2009? How did I not hear about that? You know, it's back in 2009 is when really social media came on the scene. I know that's when Facebook came on the scene. So, you know, with this technology, with all of this technology, we're able to hear so much more or read so much more. But even so, we're still not, at least from what I see, I'm still not hearing a lot about, you know, a lot of widowers and how they're dealing with you know, with their grief and the loss of their wife. Anyone else on the call was shocked to hear?
Yeah, well,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to, the thing that is interesting is that because Eddie Murphy was from my area, and he was friends with my sister and my oldest brother. So I didn't really hang out with them, but they were friends. So, you know, I had a, you know, special following with Murphy, and I was actually glad that, you know, I didn't know Charlie, I was glad that he gained some success. So, you know, someone made a point about men not necessarily handling grief of a loss of a spouse differently, and it's sort of like a stigma that follows us. You know, that we have to be strong, and if you show any type of emotion, then you're a weak man. And you know, in the past, I had some near-death experiences that kind of changed my perspective in life. So,
oh, wow.
you know, it was more about just trying to, you know, tell my story. So, you know, I have no idea what was going on in his mind other than most likely, you know, I mean, not just, I know his family, his friends knew, but, you know, and I guess for me, I would just say, you know, whatever happened to my spouse and to the public is none of their business. You know, you know, it's because it's something that you really don't want to run out and just tell the world that happened, because you just sort of, you know, have that pain that eats at you. So it's a matter of, you know, trying to swallow it and deal and go on with life, or just you figure out ways of expressing it. So someone mentioned earlier about, you know, the fear of losing both spouses, because that's what it is. You know, you look at it, if you have young kids, you just look at them and you go, well, they got one shot now. You know, they had two shots before, now they got one shot. So it's scary for me, I'm sure it's scary to everyone on the phone, that now we fear that maybe something happens to us, and then now our kids don't have any parents.
Yeah. That is such a good point.
And I agree that it is that stigma of, you know, men just accessing. I mean, because if you look at even our widows groups are comprised of, you know, mostly women, you know, and so we don't hear a lot about men's, you know, grief in the public, and especially, you know, like on the platforms of support groups, because there is that stigma, you know, that if they express their emotions, they're weak, you know, and they keep those emotions bottled up. And so, you know, I know I'm a part of multiple groups, and, you know, in those groups, you know, there is mostly women. And then also, you know, statistically, women tend to, especially Black women, become widows. We tend to, you know, we lose our husbands before men, you know, lose their wives, you know, and there's a lot of statistics that go with that either also, but I just think, you know, men just don't express, you know, that grief publicly, and especially on, you know, public platforms, you know, such as our support groups and things like that.
And I think that's not fair for men, because what happens is they bottle up, and it has to come out, but it comes out in a dysfunctional way. A lot of times people self-medicate, different addictions develop, and mental health issues develop. I think it even causes health concerns, because it just gets into your there's research that says that grief can cause physical ailments, you know, especially if it's not processed.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me think about, you know, like those high school days, those college days, when, you have one of your boys, like, you know, they break up from their girl, and you know, you're out with the fellas, and it's like, you know, you're kind of egging them on. You know, it's like, you know, go ahead, drink more, you know, get over it, check her out, you know, trying to push that friend to move on. And that's just that overall stigma that kind of follows the, you know, whatever it is, don't show emotions, you know, get over it, you know, pick yourself up. And so, you know, we just have a tendency to keep things in. And, you know, like someone said, it's unfair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with that. It is unfair because, you know, it's a part of helping others heal through telling your story. And I think if more groups like the ones that we have, more people get involved, or more groups established to bring together this type of, for the sakes of bringing together this type of discussion, I think that would help with people just trying to allowing them to finally talk about and tell their testimony. I know it'll take some time because I think we just as a culture are just to ourselves, and you know, you guys can agree with me or not, but just from what I see, it's just one of those things where it's just it takes us a little longer to process our hurt and tell others about it. And like the caller said, you know, it is unfair because others want to know. We want to know because it'll help. It'll help other men. It'll help other women heal just by hearing other stories. Anyone else? I mean, I think with, and not only Charlie Murphy, you know, I'm sure there's just been others, other widowers who have gone through the same, but I think with Charlie Murphy, it kind of hit the core of the Black community because of his special relationship, you know, because of what happened between he and his wife, and just listening to the, you know, his radio, the radio show that he gave, and him talking about his wife and the blogs and the news, it was just a sad story. It really was just a sad story, and I just wanted to hit on that and just kind of bring it in the open. You know, what happens when spouses, when both spouses do die, you know, even up before that point when the wife dies first, and, you know, there was mention of how she planned her own funeral. That had to be hard. That really had to be hard. And, you know, just want to put it out there. If you were in her situation, I know I want to tell a story quickly about, you know, once my husband died 5 years ago, we didn't have a will. He didn't have a will. He didn't want to. We kept talking about it, but we never got around to it. And by the time we were like, okay, let's do it, he got even sicker and he passed away. And so what I did was I immediately wrote a will, and then I started organizing and just writing out, okay, I want this person. I called him a project manager. I want you to be the project manager of my funeral. And just kind of mailed out different paperwork to different friends just to give them their duties if I were to die. And when I read about how Charlie Murphy's wife just planned her own funeral, you know, that just really hit a chord, hit a soft spot in me, because that had to be something that she didn't want to do, but she knew she had to do it. She had to be, you know, to me, she was strong even up to that point. And how would you all feel, you know, if I know there's a widower, I think that's Andre on the call. How was it with, and if you don't mind talking about it or sharing, you know, the days before she passed away, did you get organized? Did you, or did she get organized? Was it any planning, you know, because I want to touch on that too, as far as planning with wills and just, you know, being prepared.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, she wasn't in her mind for probably the last few weeks before she died. Like, you know, I refer to it as I lost her. So she was just so delirious, and she just was not there. So that kind of took the whole focus away from trying to plan or preparing, because it was like 2 days before she died, I was told that she was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it was it was tough to try to kind of plan anything. So when it happened, it was just sort of starting from scratch, you know, trying to figure stuff out. We didn't have a will. She didn't want to talk about it when I tried to bring it up. I should have been more forceful with that. But, you know, it really, I mean, we were in a better place than you know, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And, you know, if we were prepared, it would have been better, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. So I don't know if that played a part of, you know, the whole not planning and stuff, but, you know, like I said before, you know, 2 days before she died, it was like a Wednesday, I was told, and she died early morning Friday. So, and prior to that, you know, it was, she really couldn't talk that much, and she was, you know, struggling with memory, and you know, it was just frustrating and sad and, you know, hurtful just to see someone in front of you dying, going away like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyone else have anything to share in relation to that?
I just think it's for the family to plan like that. I'm just thinking two years ago my dad passed away, and he was 91, but about a year, maybe even and a half prior, because he was suffering from late stages of dementia, my sister and I, my brother-in-law, had went to the funeral home, a pre-arrangement we made. So when the time came, now I haven't done that because I'm a single parent, have two children, but it's something I definitely should consider. And frankly, I'm just going to be honest, and I'm upset with myself about this, but my will's not even complete. But it's for the family so they don't have, because when my husband passed away, we had, you're scrambling. Their family doesn't have to scramble because they're dealing with enough. So it's just
This is Khadija. When my husband passed away, probably about 6 months after he passed away, I did a will, I got life insurance, and, you know, started making all those tough decisions. That everyone can relate to. Something shifts in you when you meet with mortality that early on.
Yeah.
You know, my husband was 37. He hadn't even reached 40 yet. So, you know, it causes you to think about your own mortality and, well, goodness, if it could happen to him, you know, maybe I need to start thinking about this. But prior to him passing away, it wasn't a thought. The only thought was the profession that he had gone into. I was afraid that he may pass away, you know, being in that profession as a firefighter. And so, you know, one of the bargains that we had made with him doing it was, please make sure you have life insurance so that if something happens to you in the event that you are in a fire, that the children and I are protected. You know, and that was really the only conversation we ever really had about it. And, you know, he went on to get on the department. And, you know, with that comes, okay, life insurance and all of these different things that you have to put in place anyway. But I'm, as far as me, I never thought it, because you just assume, or at least, no, I did, oh, I'm going to live till I'm in my 60s or 70s or 80s because my grandparents did and my parents are. And, you know, when something like that happens, your paradigm shifts majorly. So I think when I was reading the article and I saw that he had passed away, it was like shock. And then I was reading his, you know, what he was saying about his wife and that it was his soulmate. And I think a lot of times for those of us who have been in relationships like that, where you really feel like that person is your other half, I know for me, like I always say, and I still say, a part of me left with him. So, you know, when I was reading it, I was just relating to what he said, and I was like, I get that, you know? And
Yeah.
It was just really deep, really deep, heartfelt.
It was deep. It was heartfelt. And, you know, there's one sentence in there that really got to me, and I think one of the ladies in the group mentioned it as well. You know, you don't really grasp it. When a person tells you they're going to die, you go crazy. You become a different person from the moment you hear those words, and that is absolutely true. You become a different person. I know his wife told him, and, you know, I had to tell my husband instead of a doctor telling my husband. The doctor told me, and I had to tell him. So it's not easy hearing those words, and it's not easy saying those words. Mm-hmm. So your paradigm does shift, you know, and I totally agree with you, Khadija. It's we think we're immortal at times, and we can get away with our health and not go to the doctor. And even so, she was healthy. It's just one of those things where you just never know, and you just have to, you really have to be prepared emotionally, spiritually, financially, if you can. It's a hard thing. It's a hard discussion for a lot of people to have. Anyone else?
Mm-hmm. I think that's why this is more. This is. Oh, go ahead.
For me, it was just something that I kind of dealt with within myself, because my husband was 34, and my children were 10 and 14 at the time. And my husband, he was a businessman, so he was like a stickler about life insurance, and I mean, we had insurance on the cat, you know, that's how much of a stickler he was, you know, about life insurance on that front. But just, you know, talking about death, planning death, you know, I mean, planning for death and things like that, that was having a will, that wasn't anywhere on our radar. He was 34, I was 31, you know, so we're still thinking, you know, we're young, we have time, you know. You know, my husband's death was very sudden, you know, very tragic. And unfortunately, because of the manner of death, all this planning that he did, the life insurance did not pay out. And so, you know, me and the kids didn't get anything besides a small policy that he did have through his job.
Thank God for the small one, yeah.
Yeah, and that by the grace of God paid for the funeral. And but if we didn't have that through his job, you know, I would have been trying to figure out how to pay for the funeral. So we did have that to pay for the funeral. So in my case, as far as life insurance, we were ready financially had he not passed away how he passed away. And actually, he had just switched insurance policy. So if he had kept the old insurance policy, it would have paid out. But he only had the insurance policy a year and a half, you know, before he passed away. So, you know, what it did for me, because these kids were 10 and 14, you know, it really kind of got me on the ball, because, and I think I probably overcompensated. And so I wanted to make sure that if something ever happened to me, that they would be well taken care of. And so, you know, I always made sure, like, our policies were up to date. And then I kind of knew, you know, just how I felt planning the funeral, picking out the casket, you know, planning the service, you know, all of this, you know, mundane stuff, watching how people are divided and thinking there's money and they want to fight and all of those things that go with it. I did not want my children going through all of that. And so I set out to write down, you know, just a plan for myself. And my son, you know, from the time he was 14, you know, we talked about it. You know, if something ever happens to me, this is what I want. You know, I told them to cremate me, because I don't want them having to worry about burying me. I don't want them putting all the money in the ground. We've had a plan, you know, since that happened. And even though I do have to update my will, and even though I don't have, like, a service planned out, I do have plans to go and do like the prepaid service thing because it follows you wherever you go. And that way, you know, when I do pass away, and hopefully I pass away, you know, well into the future, you know, but it, and before them. But when it does happen, I just don't want them having any worry whatsoever about my wishes, my plans.
Yeah.
What's my favorite color? You know, just you know, what type
exactly,
of power?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want them to worry about any of that. So.
And that sounds like a plan. That's awesome. You know, same here. We had a small policy for my job because he had lupus, and he wasn't. Well, he had lupus prior to him getting cancer, and it was just hard to insure him. So I definitely, and it paid for the funeral. It definitely helped. What little, you know, it was. It definitely helped. So,
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Yeah, this is to, and you know every all the widows out there, and it's up to you if you want to answer it or not. So prior to, you know, when your spouses were alive, did you guys have life insurance? Like the women?
Yes.
Yes.
I may have had the job. No, I did not.
Like, you know, you can either get it through your job, you know, like I guess depending on the company, you can get, you know, up to 4 times your salary if you go through your job, or you can go out and get your own, and, you know, you can get, you know, because you get the stuff in the mail all the time, and it shows that, oh, you know, $300,000, you pay, you know, non-smoker, you pay this, smoker, you pay that. And usually for females, it's cheaper than males.
Right.
We're idiots and we don't live long.
No. I have one on my job now, and I have another.
When you were married, that's the question. It's like when the point of it is that, you know, and at least for me personally, and even when I was part of bereavement groups, I found that a lot of the women, this is just a small sample, just my own personal, and through dealing with these other women, that it didn't seem that they had life insurance, but their spouses did, that the males did.
I had life insurance, but that's just like, that was just the type of man my husband was. He was just like, no, you know, we're getting life insurance, and that's the type of man his dad, you know, is. And so that's just something he naturally did. But after he passed away, you know, like I said, I think I overcompensated because I had, like, you know, the original life insurance plan, and then I went out and got another life insurance plan, and then I have two whole life insurance policies, and I have a term life insurance policy. So, like, if something happens to me, my kids will be well taken care of. And so I think I kind of went overboard. And I can't even say overboard, you know, because of my age, it doesn't cost me that much. But I just wanted to make sure if something happens to me, they were taken care of, because pretty much I'm all they have right now. And so... Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm not sure who I'm talking to, but, you know, while I was married, that's what my mindset. I wanted to make sure that my wife and kids were taken care of. So I was, you know, diligent in, you know, securing it where, you know, just looking at their future. It's okay, how much money is going to be needed for college? Will the house be able to be paid for? I won't be there to support them anymore. So because of that, I wanted to make sure I had the life insurance in place. But what I found out, you know, was just personally and just with other, you know, that it wasn't the same. Like, there was either they just relied on the husband to have that life insurance, but they didn't have the comparable life insurance that if something happened to them.
And I wonder if that's because, and I don't know if this is true or not, statistics show that, I mean, they both should have it, but statistics show that usually the husband dies first, if we're talking about African-Americans, I'm not sure. But I don't know. If that's the question, I wonder. If that's
I can speak.
Mm-hmm. I was going to speak from my situation. My husband was the primary breadwinner. And so, you know, the focus was like his job and his benefits and what he had. And, you know, when he passed away, all of that stuff went away. You know, it just so happened that he had a life insurance policy in place, but there was just no thought of whether or not I needed to have it ever because I was the stay-at-home mom and he was the breadwinner. And so the focus was with him and, you know, what benefits he had coming in. Like, that's a whole nother can of worms. So I'm going to stop right there. But, yeah.
No, but what you just said was key because I think that happens a lot. You know, if you want to just talk normally, you know, most husbands make more money or the breadwinners of the household. So because of that, they go through the extra precaution of, okay, making sure, well, because the salary is me, I want to make sure that if something happens to me that everyone's taken care of. But we never really think about the other side. And then especially if the wife, you know, if she's working and, you know, she's contributing financially because, you know, sometimes you need two salaries to support the family that you have. And then when that, you know, wife, she passed away, that husband, that family loses her salary. And, you know, now it's almost as if, you know, he's scrambling because the life insurance wasn't in place. Like, but it was the flip side, you know, if he did what he's supposed to do. Like in my case, I'm talking personally, because of what I did, you know, there was plenty of life insurance for my wife and kids if something happened to me.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and that's another discussion or another topic then and there. It's something that we all have to think about. You know, I just posted something today about finances. There was an article that I believe it was seven steps or seven things you can do to make sure your finances are in order. You know, during this the time of potential loss or after the transition of a spouse. And it was really good. And that's something that we all need to consider, even if none of us are sick. You know, it's definitely worthwhile. Anyone else have anything that they would like to add?
I just, what you just said, as far as, I just think, if human nature could just want to avoid that, but it's inevitable. And I think all of us, because we've lost spouses, realize this, that maybe prior we didn't, because my husband died suddenly, although he had chronic heart disease, he was on his way to work. So he wasn't in the hospital or anything. But the thing about it is, it's uncomfortable, but on this call, realized the one other point I wanted to make is like, it's not about the insurance. When it first happened 7 years ago, I was reading, I don't know, articles and research and things about being a widow. And I was reading, and I still read it, that oftentimes when you lose a spouse, the one left passes away of the same thing that the spouse passed away of. So in my head, I'm like, I don't want to joke about it, but I was like, I'm not going out like that. And so I really took an account of he died of heart disease and heart attack and things like that. high blood pressure, cholesterol. So I just really did revamp my health routine and changed some things because I'm all my children have.
We're all our children have. Exactly. Exactly. And another subject I want to delve into that I, and thanks everyone for your input, but I wanted to talk about love. You know, can we find love again? And, you know, as I was doing some research on, you know, his death and his wife, it was interesting. I just wanted to read something to you guys, a short paragraph, if you don't mind. It says, Charlie met Tisha on a boat while she was having dinner with friends, and he believed it was love at first sight when he first saw her. For me, it was an instant, said Charlie in an interview with blackdoctor.org. The first night I met Tisha was on a boat. She was having dinner with her friends. She didn't know who I was, and I asked her to come with me. Her friends told her not to go, but she did. We drove straight to my brother's house. My mother was there, my stepfather was there, Eddie was there. They were all in the kitchen, and I walked in and I said, this is my future wife. We fit, explains Murphy. I don't believe that you can meet another person that fits just like that. She wasn't even another person. She's a mirror, you know what I mean? It was like that for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
When I read that, wow, I almost started bawling, but, you know, it's one of those things where you say to yourself, and obviously he didn't remarry, can we find love again? And I think it varies from, you know, from person to person, depending on, you know, what they want in life, what they feel that they, what their needs are. I feel you can find love again. It's been 5 years for me. His wife died in 2009, so it's been a while for him. But we just didn't hear if he did find love again. So I just want to put it out there, you know. Can we find, you think you can find love again?
I think so.
Or do you want to find love again, or you don't want to find love again?
I think so, and yes, I do. It's been 7 years for me, Sabra, and I depend a lot on faith, my faith, and so I'll just say I yes to both of those because I still believe myself to be relatively young, and I think many of us on all of us on this call are within a certain range. And so I'm not going to sit here and say I had a 2-month-old baby and an 8-year-old 7 years ago when it happened. When I look 7 years later, I'm like, yeah, this could happen. And I'm definitely open to it if it does. But, you know, but I'm depending on God. That's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know I definitely do. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I know I definitely do. You know, I'm 37, and, you know, I definitely do. You know, I'm 37, and I've, you know, talked about this in the group a lot. You know, and when people my age are just now kind of like starting their families or they have smaller children, In a year and a half, I'll have an empty nest. And so, you know, my son is getting ready to, you know, to transfer to another college and, you know, move into his own apartment. My daughter will be, you know, on a college, you know, campus. And so, you know, I would like to be married again, you know, because I do want the companionship, you know, and I'm just in a really awkward position, you know, right now, because all of my friends are married with small children, or if they're not married, they have small children, and here I am, widowed at 37, and my nest is about to be empty, and so, you know, I don't have a relationship, a close relationship with my biological family, And, you know, things happen, you know, when you become widowed. And so I'm no longer close to my in-laws. And so, you know, I don't mind being alone. You know, I travel a lot. I do a lot of things for me, and I'm actually content. But I do desire, you know, to be married again because I want someone to, you know, share all of these wonderful things that are going to be happening in the future with me. I want someone to share that with, you know. So I'm open to it. But it is hard. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it is hard. But, you know, go ahead. Anyone else?
I was just going to say, I read something somewhere, or I thought it, I don't know how I came across this, but every man cannot handle a widow's heart.
That's good. That's so true. That is so true.
That's the type of people, women we are in our experience. Everybody can't handle that. And so it's very difficult, I think, for our circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, people with children, they blend family. I don't think it's because of the kids. I think it's because of our background and circumstances and things we've been through. We've been through the depths of grief, and we are still there, and we've changed it, and we're different. I don't know if anyone else could speak to this. This is the way I feel about it. But I came to the conclusion that everybody can't handle a widow's heart.
I think that's part of it, but I think also too, 3 months ago I would have had a very different answer than what my answer was going to be tonight. Only because you guys know, and I'm glad we're having this conversation. I know it's being recorded, and I don't really care, but I'm in grief counseling. And so I'm also I have a relationship coach. And so, you know, I was telling her that I'm going to grief counseling, and we did a symbolic grief exercise last week. And in this exercise, she had me imagine the qualities of my husband. And, you know, each quality that I brought up, I had to imagine a symbol for that quality. So, for instance, he was a good dad. So the symbol that came up for me was a hand reaching down to an adult hand reaching down to a little child's hand reaching up. And with each symbol that I had to imagine, she had me, like, say, to bring the symbol into the future. And the level of anxiety that I had doing that exercise, it brought me to a place where I said to her, I don't think today is a good idea for me to do this. Because I could not imagine those qualities that my husband had in anyone else. And one of the reasons why I wanted to go to grief counseling was because I had been dating, and I was like, I'm dating, there are men around, but this connection that I desire is not happening. Why? Like, you know, I just was like, there's something else here. And I had this subconscious, I don't know what the word is, but there was subconsciously something there for me that I could not let go of my husband. Told her within that exercise, I feel like I'm leaving him behind. You're asking me to pull all of these qualities out. And every time you're asking me to pull these qualities out, I feel like I'm separating from him. Because she said one rule, you cannot picture his mind. You can't picture his face when you do this exercise. So I couldn't imagine him while I was doing the exercise. I had to really just connect with those qualities. So it was, you know, for me, I didn't realize. That's why when I was reading Charlie Murphy's article and he was talking about this woman being his soulmate, I connected, I guess, more with that than any other thing, because I really felt like my husband was my other half, the other half of me. So it's really been hard for me to date because I'm still thinking about him, you know, and I'm working through it, of course, with the relationship coach and, you know, going to the grief counseling. But runs really deep, I think, for a lot of us, you know, especially as women. And I know some of us married young. I married young. I married at 18. So I spent all of my adult life with my husband. I didn't know anything else. So, yeah.
And you know what? Thank you so much for sharing that, because that's another show coming up in May.
Mm-hmm.
and you said you married at 18. I married at 22, and I'm sure I think someone else, someone may have married between the time, between our ages that we married. That's on the call, and that's one thing. You know, you marry young, and that's all you've been with, and then you're single, and then you're dating. You know, and it's hard. It really is. And, you know, that's another topic. I'm so glad that there's support groups out there that, you know, Carrie Phillips has young widowed in dating, and there's other groups out there as it relates to dating, you know, for widows. And it's needed. It really is needed, because it's something that's hard for us. It really is. And with me, I think it's, you know, when I hear the stories, it's like, well, man, you might as well just date a widower, because they get it, you know. I don't know. I don't know if anyone feels that way. But like I said, that's another story, folks. It's 11:57. I'm going to have to end it here. But is there anything else that anyone would like to share before we sign off in about 3 minutes? If you can share something within 1 minute, that would be fine.
I won't take even that long. I just appreciate the fellowship of other, because, you know, it's been a while for me, but I still get, it's still isolated. And so I just like the conversation. So I appreciate you having the show.
Yeah. And I could feel within this, you know, within this whole conversation that I could just sense the energy, you know, that people want to talk. You want to talk about it, because it's something we don't, you know, we get it. We could talk about it to someone who hasn't been it, walked in our shoes, and it, to me, it just goes on deaf ears, because you just really don't understand. But I just want to thank you guys for calling in this evening. I know, like I said, it's late, but you know what? I think I like this. I normally have it on Saturdays as well at 11, but I think I'm going to kind of do both. Okay, they're telling me I have 90 seconds, but I just want to thank you all. You know, thank you for joining. Please join us tomorrow at 9 o'clock Eastern as I chat with Rochelle Ham. And she's going to talk to us specifically about the Ham Alert, which is a petition for lawmakers to help pass that relates to more oversight of shipping companies, similar to air traffic controllers for planes, to stop companies from sending ships into dangerous weather, because her husband perished in the El Faro cargo ship that went down October 2015. So just please remember, grief never ends, but it changes. It's a passage, not a place to stay. Grief is not a sign of weakness nor a lack of faith. It's the price of love. So until next time, you all, you just stay encouraged. And thank you for joining. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.